And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I thank you for joining me today. Hey, it's everybody's favorite time of year, right? I mean, here in Texas, it is allergy season. And of course, nationwide, it is tax time. Well, it's past us now. You should have gotten your filing into the IRS earlier this week if you didn't do it before that. And it begs the question, how was the process for you this year? Did you get it done on time? Maybe you filed an extension. Do you feel like you paid too much in taxes again this year? Did you owe more on your return maybe than was withheld? Or maybe you got a refund, right? Overpaid in essence throughout the year on your withholdings. So we're going to talk about, on today's show, we're going to talk about one of the big benefits of investing in residential real estate. And those are the tax advantages, the tax benefits. And they're really, you know, there are a lot of benefits to real estate investing. We absolutely love our cash flow. It's that cash flow that you accrue and that you build up, that passive income that gets you to financial freedom, got me to my financial freedom, for example. It's very easy to go out and create an additional $1,000 in passive income that comes in every month, no matter what you do, by investing in apartments or investing in a couple of single family houses. That's it. Maybe you build that to $2,000. Maybe you build that more. And we love the equity plays. There are a lot of equity plays in real estate. Equity capture, equity buildup, different forms of appreciation. So you can really build some wealth with real estate. And in fact, it may surprise you really how fast that wealth accrues on your balance sheet once you start. My wife and I were very much surprised after we first bought our first couple of houses, got another one, got five after that really quickly in succession. It really starts to build. But when it comes to that cash flow and it comes to that wealth and tapping into that wealth, remember that it's not what you make, it's what you keep at the end of the day. And this is where the tax advantages very much come into play. If you're a business owner and you have cash flow and things coming from your business, you know where I'm going to be going with this. So it's tax time. It's fresh on everybody's minds. So let's dive in. And I want to help you understand the tax advantages when it comes to residential rental real estate. Now, just a heads up, today's show, we're talking about federal taxes. On next week's show, I want to get into another tax topic, and it's kind of a rite of spring here in Texas. Anyhow, I don't know about some of the other states out there, but I'm talking about protesting your property taxes. I'm seeing a lot of chatter out there on social media. My notices have started to come in from the counties. How much are they taking me up this year? What can I do about it? Well, it's an important topic. Whether you have rental property or not, if you just own your personal residence at the moment, you should be protesting those property taxes every year. So we're going to take a look at the process, and I'll give you some tips, some tricks, things that can help you succeed in that battle with the appraisal district. If you have any concrete questions, by the way, or maybe just a personal experience you want to relate from past years that maybe I can bring up on air, you can email those questions, that experience to me. Send those to askandy@luinc.com. Again, that's askandy@luinc.com. So federal tax time, we're going to start there. And how was it for me this year? Well, once again, had to file an extension. So I didn't actually get my full return filed on time. Just like last year, I was missing one single solitary document in order to be able to file. A K-1 is a document we get from the people that manage an investment that we have participated in passively. Fortunately, this is not from one of my passive apartment investments. In fact, it's not an investment with any Lifestyles Unlimited leads, or you may call them syndicators. Like, all of those guys are great. Got them all in plenty of time. I ventured off the ranch, so to speak, and invested in a non-real estate thing. And they're late this year, last year. I find that a a lot of actors, so to speak, outside of Lifestyles Unlimited just do not have it together the same way that our lead investors that are steering the apartment projects, the same way that they do. So, hey, I'm waiting to see the full return. So what I'm going to do today, I'm going to take a look at the prior year. And it's interesting because the filings we did that year, so last year, for the year prior, we had sold a rental house for, boy, close to $200,000 in capital gains. Just on the sale of that one single house. This is some of the power of real estate. And I want to talk to you about what the taxes on that sale looked like. We did not do a 1031 exchange, if you know what that is. We'll define that later if you don't. But I want you to understand, what did that tax look like, that tax burden from the sale, so that you can understand the benefits of real estate when it comes to harvesting your equity. I mentioned already there are a lot of equity plays. Those build up over time. The longer you hold that property, the greater that equity becomes. At some point, you tap into it. Well, what are the benefits when you do harvest that equity? And I also want to take a look at a Schedule E for one of my properties. And just walk through that. If you don't know what the Schedule E is, that's essentially the profit and loss statement that you file on a given property with the IRS. Okay, so it's got revenue in, it's got expenses out. We'll take a look at that so that you can also see how all those things play together to give you tax advantages that essentially protect your cash flow. If you're doing it right, if you're doing what we teach you at Lifestyles Unlimited, you pay little to no taxes on your cash flow. So those are some of the benefits broadly, right? We're protecting our cash flow. When we have a sale, we protect those capital gains. And I'll tell you, I am not a CPA, right? I should have given you this caveat at the very start. I'm not a CPA, so if you do have very detailed or concrete tax questions, a CPA, certified professional accountant, is your best bet to talk to. Maybe an EA, that's an enrolled agent. You can work with both of those when it comes to filing your taxes. And I'll tell you, I get this question a lot from people. They bought their first rental house, maybe bought their second, third, even their fifth. They're doing their taxes on their own. They're like, hey, Andy, what do you think I should put here on the Schedule E? I say, hey, look, you need to go get a CPA. Why don't you outsource that? First thing I did, first rental house bought, bam, lined up that CPA. Makes my life a lot easier. It really does. So I'm not a CPA, but I'm going to make a comment here. I'm going to make a comment here because you're going to want to talk to a CPA. I'm going to tell you about something that's coming up real soon. We're going to talk today about tax advantages, but we have a big, big event that's coming up here, boy, just in a couple of weeks. And I know we're going to get into tax topics there as well. I'm talking about our Wealth and Passive Income Expo and Bus Tour. That's May 7th to the 10th, right here where I sit in the DFW area. It's in Irving, Texas. It's going to be at the Irving Convention Center. And what that is many days, multiple days of thousands of investors getting together. If you choose just to go to the regular straight expo, great. There will be a lot of breakout sessions, a lot of topics. And I was looking back, I don't have the current schedule of classes, but I was looking at the expo from a year or two ago. Here's one, current tax laws as they apply to real estate, single family and multifamily investing. Right. There's another one over here. Exit strategies. Well, exit strategies apply to like with my sale of a rental house. We'll talk about that here in a minute. So the expo is a great place to go if you want to get into a little bit more detail. I guarantee you there will be CPAs there moving around. So people you'll meet and greet and get to talk to. If you want to go on the bus tour, you'll get even more into detail on the passive investing side, and you'll have opportunity. There will be mentors on those buses with you. You'll be going out to multifamily apartments, to properties that our members own and operate. So you'll be able to ask them questions as you tour the property. Hey, tell me, how have you used things like depreciation, cost segregation? And we'll touch upon those lightly here in the second part of the show, but I want to make you aware of that Wealth and Passive Income Expo. And guess what? Here's where your CPA comes in. Can you write off the trip? If you're a real estate investor, you know, probably you can. Talk to your CPA, write off the mileage, write off the airfare, the hotel costs, the car rental, the other transportation, Uber, whatever you do. Meals at 50%, by the way. So have that conversation with your CPA if you are planning to come. Because there's some tax advantages there as well. Again, that's the Wealth and Passive Income Expo, May 7th through the 10th. If you want to learn more, text EXPO, E-X-P-O, to 88007. If you do sign up, be sure to use the promo code RADIO. That will give you $100 off whichever pass or package you choose. Several of those have sold out, by the way, so don't sit on that information too much longer. It's EXPO, text EXPO to 88007, promo code RADIO. So First thing I want to talk about is just a concrete example, because I mentioned earlier we sold a house. This was now 2 years ago. This appeared on our tax filing last year, not for the current year, not the current session we just got through. So we had capital gains, and pretty significant capital gains just on the sale of one house. That's why we invest in real estate. One of the ways we make money is our equity capture. The equity buildup is another. The market appreciation, we saw all of that. And we enjoyed that when we harvested it. Now, did we encounter short-term or long-term capital gains? Let's define that so you understand the difference. And short-term means I've held it for a year or less. Right? Typically, if you're doing any kind of day trading in the stock market or Bitcoin or any of that stuff, you're making quick turns and you're entering short-term gains tax brackets. Right? Short-term capital gains, simply put, are taxed as ordinary income. Well, what's the 2025 top bracket you could get into with that? A whopping 37% on your short-term capital gains. That's a big number. If I hold a house for a year and one day, that puts me into long-term capital gains categories. Why would I want to do this? Well, to get away from that possible 37% bracket. You know, if you're flipping a house, you're holding it for shorter than a year. You're going to pay ordinary income tax rates on those gains if you have them. If I hold it for longer term, I get into three possible brackets, the highest of which is 20%. The middle point is 15%. And depending on where your total taxable income lands, it might be 0%. That's right. You could have a big capital gain and have a 0% bracket applied, tax rate applied to that gain. So what are the thresholds? Let's take a quick look at that. In 2025, right, if you, let's just say married filing jointly, right, if your total taxable income, right, this is the calculation, if I find my, I've got my 1040, page one here, if I look down at the very bottom, line item 15, my total taxable income is listed there. If that number, married filing jointly, in 2025 is at or below $96,700, and you have a capital gain event long term, that tax rate is 0%. Now it goes up to 15% above that number, again, married filing jointly, all the way up to $600,000 in taxable income. So there's a really big, it's a really big bandwidth there for that 15 percentile tax rate on long-term capital gains. Above that, you go to 20%. Okay. So in 2023, this is when I had the sale of that particular property, the comparable rate, that bracket for 15%, that's kind of the hurdle that we needed to stay under. For married filing jointly, that started, or to get to 15%, that was at $89,251. So where did my taxable income land? Well, and how did we get it there? So taxable income did in fact come in below that threshold. If I look back at that 10... Let's see here. Where is it? 1040. If I look at line item 7, capital gain or loss, the capital gain, $187,000 on the sale of one single family rental property. That's that one sale, period. It's a big number. What did we pay in taxes? Nothing. We didn't pay anything in taxes because through some of the things that the tools we're able to use as real estate investors, we were able to push that taxable income down below that 15 percentile, you know, that minimum income, taxable income for married filing jointly. If you're single, right, you've got a little bit of a different bracket. You can find these if you do a quick Google search, you know, capital gains tax rate, long-term capital gains tax rate 2025, right? You'll find a table with the schedule there for 0%, 15%, 20%. But we were able to push our taxable income on our tax return down below that number to where that $187,000 in gain was taxed at 0%. There was no tax liability. How did we do that? How did we get there? Well, we're going to get into that on the backside of the break, so stick around.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
I put money into real estate, and from there came one of my largest returns on one of my properties, which is about close to 300% return in about 14 months.
That's Joe Cantu on what Lifestyles Unlimited has done for him. Join Del Wamsley and Lifestyles Unlimited for Expo 2025, May 7th through the 10th in Irving, Texas. Get hands-on training from successful investors and learn proven strategies that work. Save $100 when you text EXPO to 88007, EXPO to 88007.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb. Thanks for tuning in today. Hey, if you have any questions for me on today's topic or anything else related to investing in single-family rental houses, investing passively in apartments, maybe you want to be a lead. I'm not a lead, but I can get you, I can steer you in the right direction. I've got a lot of knowledge now. We've done a lot of learning over 13-plus years as members at Lifestyles Unlimited, my wife and I, so we picked up quite a bit. I'm happy to help you. You can send those questions to me at askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. So how do we sell a house, have a $187,000 gain, and not pay any taxes on that gain? This is a good place, first and foremost, to talk about something called depreciation. Okay, we're gonna get to the answer here. But depreciation is one of those things that we can do as real estate investors with our real estate investments, with our houses, with our apartments. It's a huge benefit. If you own your personal house, you cannot depreciate your personal house. What is depreciation? It's a paper expense that recognizes the fact that there is wear and tear on my property, and it's going to devalue over time as carpet gets worn out, as the roof has to be replaced, right? This stuff that happens with time, right? And the IRS says, hey, that house, the sticks and bricks, not the land, you know, you cannot depreciate land, but the improvements on that land you can depreciate for houses over 27 and a half years. It's kind of a weird number. I don't know where that came from, but hey, that's the number we use. That's dictated by the IRS. 27 and a half years. So when I buy a house, right, let's say I pay $100K, my CPA is going to back out whatever the land value is at the time of purchase, and the difference, right, that's what I will depreciate. Any improvements I make, because what are we doing? We're buying distressed assets that do need work. If I do $50,000 in improvements to that house, well, those are going to be depreciated as well. Some of those we may be able to expense, some will be capitalized and rolled into the depreciation. But the big point is this: depreciation, it's a paper expense. It represents something that will happen in the future, perhaps, as wear and tear occurs. But as savvy real estate investors, as members at Lifestyles Unlimited, when we buy that distressed property, we follow the motto, best product, best price. And we go in and we fix anything that's broken now or could break in a handful of years. So when you hear depreciation and you hear wear and tear and you think, oh man, that sounds like maintenance calls from the residents, you really don't have those because you've addressed all that maintenance. You've pulled it forward to today. But the IRS knows that things wear out, and we represent that on our tax return as depreciation. And there are two sources of depreciation that you're going to get as a real estate investor when you invest in residential real estate. That's going to be your houses, your single-family rental houses, and that's going to be apartments. And that's where I source my two components of depreciation. We're going to start with those rental houses and talk about how you file your taxes every year. I mentioned that we use what's called a Schedule E. And I get this question quite a bit, too, from new investors. Hey, I just bought my first rental house. How should I track my expenses? Well, I would tell you, go straight to the IRS website, find a copy, a blank form, Schedule E, and use that because it basically represents a profit and loss statement. The first line is rents received. Below that, royalties received. Okay, doesn't really apply. Everything else are expenses. Advertising, auto and travel, cleaning and maintenance, these are all line items. Commissions, like if I hire a leasing agent to rent the house for me, maybe you're in San Diego investing in Kansas City. We have members that are doing that, and you don't want to deal with doing the lease up from afar. You can hire a local agent, and you'll pay them a commission. Well, that would appear right here under commissions. Property insurance, right? Legal and other professional fees, the list goes on. I don't need to read these to you. But this is the form when it comes to tax filing that I prepare on my side out of my books for my CPA. Some CPAs, you just send that to them, that your books, whatever you have, your Excel form. So if you're not sure where to start, go find that Schedule E. Use that to build out your profit and loss statement and track your expenses there. And really, the expenses that we're looking at, because we fix this thing up front, like we talked about, cleaning and maintenance, basically zero. Now, if I have a resident move out and another one move in, sure, I'll have some cleaning costs. But looking at this particular property here, rents received $20,000 over the year, right? I see I had property insurance costs because we do renew that annually. Mortgage interest, this is a big number. And I believe there was a threat at some point to take the expensibility, if that's a word, away from real estate investors as it relates to mortgage interest. But we can expense that. And we do buy with a debt because we're able to buy more property with less cash by using financing. So I see a big number, at least on my statement, for mortgage interest, right? Property taxes, we're going to talk about how to protest those next week. We want to keep them down because it's an actual cash expense. But we do report those, obviously, on our statement. And then here, utilities, some other things, but depreciation. And there it is. It's a paper expense. In this case, this particular house, it was about, let's see, $4,600. In fact, Schedule E has three columns, so I can report three different properties. The property to the side here, $4,800 in depreciation. The other one, $4,000. It's all going to depend on the property you've bought, the cost basis, all that fun stuff, the amount of renovations, how much of that was capitalized. But you can see the depreciation appears on here. And depreciation is the thing that protects our cash flow. Right? I'm cash flow positive on all of my properties, but when I apply depreciation, that reduces my income in the eyes of the IRS. That can push me into a negative position on their documents. Again, cash flow positive, but we're able to use depreciation to offset that cash flow, drive us into a negative position in that particular property, and pay no taxes on the cash flow. Now, do that across a portfolio of 20? Great, great. You can build up those losses. So depreciation as well as actual cash expenses appear on that Schedule E. Remember, when it comes to depreciation, though, it's just the sticks and bricks part of that, the improvements to that property, the property itself. Do not use the land value. Now, if you are following the model that we talk about in buying distressed property, like I said, you're going in there and you're doing a lot of renovations in the first place before anyone moves in. You want to do that up front so you have everything taken care of and your hold period is very, very smooth. But by buying fixer-uppers, this drives typically a very big loss in the first year, just because of the volume of renovations that you're doing. And again, this is where you talk with a CPA, because some of those renovations may have to be capitalized, and that just means you put it against your cost basis. You do not take it as a full expense this year. And then it pushes up your depreciation every year. Some of that may be able to be expensed. Again, talk to your CPA. Understand, too, that some CPAs are more conservative when it comes to this stuff. Some are less conservative, so you might want to think about, before you interview a CPA or a number of CPAs, what kind of questions do I need to ask? If I'm a little bit, let's say, less risk-averse when it comes to things like an audit or whatever, and I want to push those expenses this year, is that CPA going to be willing to do that, right? Or are they going to be a little more conservative? Are they going to want to capitalize everything and push that into the future by way of depreciation? Think about that. Think about your prospect for the future as well. You may want to depreciate later rather than take the expenses this year. Apartments, so that's houses. Apartments, same thing, bigger scale, much bigger scale. Typically, you have losses at takeover, just like with our houses. We're doing some form of reposition. We're buying some asset that is distressed for some reason, physically, run poorly, not making the income it could. There's something going on there. So it typically drives a paper loss at the outset. But here's a really cool thing with apartments. The leads, the syndicators that I've invested with, they will often do, not always, and you need to ask them ahead of time before investing, if this is the reason you're investing is to drive passive losses, you need to ask them the question, do you plan to accelerate your depreciation on this property? And they can do this by doing something called a cost segregation study, whereby if you think about any property, your house, apartments, whatever it is, you've got a roof, you've got walls, you've got carpet, you've got tile flooring, you've got doors, you've got doorknobs, you've got mirrors, you've got peepholes, all the things that comprise that property, forget about the land, and they all depreciate at different rates. So I just want to circle back and to make sure this concept is clear, because in a nutshell, what it means is that a lead investor, a syndicator on the apartments that we invest in as passives, they can choose to pull the depreciation forward. Instead of 27 and a half years for the total cost basis in that property, they can accelerate the carpets because their lifespan is only 5 years. doorknobs, something else, right? That wooden fence out there, it's got a 10-year, let's say, lifespan. I don't know. You can look that up. The IRS has a schedule, right, for all this stuff, too. But they pull this forward, so they take a much bigger depreciation hit in year one and in year two and so on. There's some other things that play in there as well. But as a result of that, this drives big passive losses in the first year of our investment in that particular property, right? And we can use those passive losses to offset passive gains, okay? So if you're needing to drive passive paper losses to offset gains that you expect or have, this is a good way to do it. So you can do it with houses, it's going to be a smaller number, or you can do it with apartments, it's going to balloon significantly. So we did this, though not fully, right? Those passive losses that we have from, we were investing in a number of apartment communities passively, that pushed us down below the taxable threshold when we sold that particular house. That pushed us into the 0% tax bracket for long-term capital gains. It's as simple as that. We used the losses from our passive investments, and we used the depreciation against our income on our houses to push down the taxable income to get into a favorable bracket on those long-term gains. Now, that's how we use those losses. You can also use passive losses, by the way, against earned income. I'm no longer working. I don't really have earned income. But you can use passive losses against earned income up to a point, right? There's a cutoff. If you earn above a certain dollar amount, that benefit goes away. If you don't use the passive losses this year, you do save those. They roll forward, and they roll forward again until you need them. So you don't lose them if you don't use them in a given way, in a given year, I should say. But you can use those passive losses against earned income up to a cap, or if you are a real estate professional and you can elect that designation, there's some hows and whys and tracking and stuff you have to do, but then there's no limitation. You can take all of your passive losses when you need them against earned income. This is great for the scenario where you have two spouses. One is, let's say, a lawyer, doctor, high earner. Maybe the other one goes out and gets that real estate professional designation and uses those passive losses to totally offset that income from the high earner. We talk about this at Lifestyles Unlimited. If you're interested in learning more, that may be a topic at the expo, by the way. So we got to zero taxes on our capital gain through depreciation and through passive losses on our apartment investments, and that drove our taxable income down. There are other options. In fact, a very commonly discussed option in real estate circles is to do a tax-deferred sale using a 1031 exchange. This is a big benefit to real estate investors. And what that means is I sell this property, I do what's called a 1031 exchange. 1031 is part of the tax code. And that allows me to roll the gains from the sale of that property into another like-kind property. So I can sell, you know, usually it's more rentals, right? So let's say I sell that single-family house, I do a 1031 exchange. I defer the taxes that I would pay on the capital gains, as well as depreciation recapture. I'm just going to throw that out there. And then we use those funds to buy two more. And we do that consistently and over time and regularly step up the volume and the size of our single family portfolio while deferring the taxes. No taxes owed. Or here's another scenario. Maybe you sell that one single family rental house, or maybe you have multiple. Sell them all. Sell them as a portfolio. And step up into multifamily. Go out and buy your own apartment building just as a single solitary investor. Yeah, you can do that. We'll talk about that again at the Wealth and Passive Income Expo. There will be classes for people that are interested in becoming what is called an independent rental owner, somebody that goes and buys their own apartments. There will be thousands of investors there, a lot of members that have done this very thing. So if you want to talk to people that have that experience, great place to go. Again, that's May 7th through the 10th here in Irving, Texas. Now, we didn't do a 1031 exchange. Why not? I've gotten this question a few times from people. We wanted the funds out so that we could invest passively in apartments. And there's some information around how a 1031 exchange. There will be somebody teaching on 1031 exchanges there as well, for sure. But there are requirements around the tax ID and that sort of thing. And if I pull my funds out of a house that I personally own under my social security number or my LLC, I cannot then roll that into a passive investment because that is another entity, unrelated. However, there is a way. Oh yeah. And I love this. I had an interview with a guy named Steve. It's been a while. Steve is in San Diego, and I'm sure he'll be at the Wealth and Passive Income Expo as well, but he told me about a trick he used And he had a property that had accrued massive equity. And he sold that. And he did do a 1031 exchange. And he did get invested passively in apartments. But it wasn't a straight line. And I like this strategy. He did that 1031 exchange. He used the funds to buy several single-family rentals, one of which he paid all cash. And there's something you can do on the financing side when you pay all cash for a property. You can do what's called delayed financing if you do that within 6 months. So guess what he did? Delayed financing, which is essentially a cash-out refinance on that property, pulled the funds out. By the way, when you do a cash-out refinance, whether it's delayed financing or it's a property you've had for years, that is not a taxable event. It's just resetting the debt. So he did delayed financing, pulled out a big chunk of cash, and was able to invest that then passively in apartments. So yeah, there's a way to get there. There is a way to get there. Went on to invest passively. I love that. And we get these ideas, we share these ideas when we meet and we talk to each other. And again, I have to harken back. Expo. Thousands of people will be there. That is a great place to hear these sort of strategies. Other tax advantages. So listen, depreciation, that's going to protect your cash flow. Your ongoing cash flow as you hold that property. You're going to accrue those passive losses, whether houses or apartments. Those are going to help protect your capital gains. That's what we used to offset ours to get to 0% tax rate on that gain. You can do a 1031 exchange as well if you want to take that approach and defer the taxes. Now, do they eventually come due? Yeah, of course they do. But what if your strategy rather than is to keep deferring, keep rolling into the next property or properties, deferring until you die? That essentially becomes your heirship tax strategy because your heirs now inherit that property at what is called a stepped up basis. Basis is what you have invested in that property, right? So let's say you bought a single family rental years ago, 10 years ago, and you were all in for $100,000. And over time, because we enjoy making money multiple ways on these things, you have equity capture. So you pushed up the value by adding value through the renovations. And over time, you've gained equity as the market has appreciated. And now that house value is at $300,000. Okay. I die. My son inherits that house. If he sells that property the day he inherits it, is he going to pay taxes on the, what is that, roughly $200,000 in capital gains, right? $300,000 net of the $100,000 in my cost basis. No, because that property is now revalued using what's called stepped up basis. They look at the current market value at the time my son or your heirs receive that property at your passing. So if he turns around and sells it for $300,000, what's his tax liability? Zero. In fact, with sales costs, it's going to be somewhere south of zero. So tax advantages, they keep going on beyond you. So if you're looking to build wealth for the next generation, keep that in mind as well. Depreciation, passive losses, cost segregation, all things that play in to protect our cash flow and our wealth, using the 1031 exchange to defer those taxes and roll those onward, and then stepped up basis to help my heirs out when I pass. Great tools. But tax advantage, it's huge. That's just one of the ways that we make money. Keep that in mind. It's not the reason most people start, by the way. I started to achieve cash flow to help my wife retire from a terrible job. Other people start because they want to build wealth for those very heirs. Cash flow, equity capture, equity buildup, market appreciation, if you're doing apartments, forced appreciation, are all going to drive your cash flow and your wealth building. And then we use those tax advantages to protect each and every one of those. So if you want to learn more, I would really strongly encourage you, as I have a couple times today already, to go out, check out our Wealth and Passive Income Expo and the bus tour that's going to be May 7th through the 10th in Irving, Texas, in Las Colinas, right in between Dallas and Fort Worth, easy to get to. And you can text the keyword EXPO, E-X-P-O, to 88007 to learn more. Use the promo code RADIO, and that'll give you a $100 discount off any of those passes or packages. And remember, we're going to talk next week, another tax topic. We're going to talk about protesting those property taxes. If you have any specific questions ahead of that time, send those to me at askandy@luinc.com. I'll talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.